This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good day to you for Wednesday, August 7th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, here, of course, with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Doug. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good. Good.
Good. You? Good. Are you nervous?
I'm always nervous before a show. I'm shaking in my shoes here and biting my nails and everything.
We're going to have a good show tonight.
Yes, we welcome all those listening to us live as well as those listening to the archive version. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly service or weekly program, we also operate the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. My lips didn't want to work. which is a metaphysics school that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics. And there's a lot of specializations possible, including spiritual counseling, life coaching, paranormal science, ufology, now cryptozoology, holistic healing, and they just go on, you know, organizational leadership. There's, about 25 or 26 specializations total. So if you have any interest in any of those, visit us at metaphysicsinstitute.org for a premier metaphysics university. So tonight we have a special guest, namely me.
I got to tell you, I'm really looking forward to tonight, Doug. I've got some questions for you, because I think this is fascinating, how anyone can start an organization, let alone an organization like this. So I got some questions.
So that's going to be the theme of our topic tonight, is how it all started. And Dr. Vicki has written up some questions, and I don't know what they are. So... She's going to ask me questions about how MCHS started, where it started, how it runs, and various other things. So at this juncture, I'm going to turn it over to her.
Well, and we will talk about the principles of belief, Doug, but I'd like to incorporate it into the program, if that's all right. And just, you know, as MCHS Church built, you know, I'm assuming then the principles of belief came throughout the production, you know, of your endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But I'd really like to back up a bit and start with just maybe sharing, if you would share just a little bit of your background and then how you got into metaphysics in the first place, because I think that's what inquiring minds really want to know.
Well, I suppose, like so many of us, I got into metaphysics but didn't know I got into metaphysics. So, you know, it goes back. I mean, if I'm to be honest, which I always am, it goes back to when I was a kid. I mean, I've been interested in metaphysical concepts on existence and consciousness, even though that's not the terms I used back in the day. But I've always been interested in those concepts and the broad aspect of those concepts, such as, you know, how everything works, the universe, the planet, including mysterious creatures and phenomena, and all of those different things that relate all the way back to us, to the human condition, to our existence, to who we are in the grand scheme of things. So it goes right back to when I was, you know, just a child of 7 or 8 or 9. As I grew older, of course, my interest only continued to grow, and you know, resulting in reading all kinds of different books, especially through my teens. You know, they centered more on ufology or mysterious creatures or things of that nature. But as I got into my 20s and my 30s, those concepts would change to personal growth topics. Napoleon Hill and Zig Ziglar and many others that I read and listened to and learn from, and, you know, and brainstormed with, if you will, even though they, you know, they weren't here. But you know, it got me thinking, and so it just continued to grow. And then as I got into my 40s, I started teaching. I'd always been teaching. I'd always been part of a ministry, a Christian ministry, up until I was about 40. But in my 40s, I began to branch out into teaching managers and leaders on a variety of topics such as leadership and communication skills and management techniques and all that. But the thing that I always did and I always understood, and it's permeated everything I've ever taught, is that, you know, you want better people, teach them life skills. So I always knew intuitively that if you want good employees, they need to have their lives together. If you've got an employee who's in the middle of a dysfunctional, toxic relationship, you know, you're going to have nothing but problem. They're going to be so depressed and discouraged, and they've got stuff going on. They'll be late. They won't be productive. And so if you can teach people how to have better lives, you're going to have better people regardless of what you're doing. And that just goes stands true with all of us. If we have our stuff in order, then life goes better. Hence the life skills.
What I'm hearing, it's in between the lines here, is not only did you have this curiosity about, geez, how does the universe work? You had a curiosity about human nature and people.
Well, absolutely, and it kind of came to a focal point on understanding the human condition. So everything I do now is within the context of what does it mean to the human condition? What does it mean to human nature? What does it mean to our existence? You know, whatever we're talking about, I don't care what it is, whether it's UFOs or Bigfoot or ghosts or psychic phenomena or, you know, or assertive communication skills or relationship skills, how does it impact the human condition? That's my focal point, and I call it para-anthropology.
I recall you saying you spent about 5 years on the road, mm-hmm. just flying all over the country. And
teaching seminars, yeah.
And you had developed some courses of your own at that time as well, didn't you?
Well, yes and no. The company I contracted with a couple of different companies that sent me all over creation in the United States and Puerto Rico. Anyway, and so they had their topic, and you know, they had the points that needed to be covered in the seminar, and they were usually day long, and a lot of the ones I ended up doing were 2-day seminars. So what I was able to do was to teach those topics in my own way. That's part of the deal. So it gave me an opportunity to develop a lot of things, or further develop a lot of things, because some of the things I was teaching were already under development, but it allowed me to hone them and fine-tune them, namely this life leadership paragon.
So the life leadership paragon, if I have some events, kind of, if I'm synchronizing events, did that come before or after your involvement and, well, you founding Paranexus?
Oh, that was long before. The life leadership paragon, and for those who are not familiar with it, paragon means a model of excellence. So the life leadership paragon is a model for living, and it has essentially 4 elements: self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, and these 3 create synergistically self-completeness. So the objective of the life leadership paragon is to be complete within yourself, and you do that through self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will. That model actually had evolved. It started back in about 2001. I began to develop it for my Empowered Recovery website and book. And that Empowered Recovery is a program for those in alcoholic relationships. It's for the non-alcoholic in an alcoholic relationship. So it addresses codependence. It addresses how to basically resolve an alcoholic relationship. And in my book, The Alcoholic Relationship Survival Guide, which has been out for, I don't know, 6 years, and it was a developing work in progress, over those first few years. But back in 2001, I created the first version of the Life Leadership Paragon and called it the Recovery. I originally called it the Recovery Triad. And now in the Empowered Recovery book, it's called the Recovery Paragon. Or, you know, honestly, I can't remember if I updated it or not. I think it did. But
was that your first program that you had written, Doug?
It was my first, yeah, program course. I mean, it's a program. And it's,
and you had done some writing prior to that, though. You've always been interested in writing, I
yeah,
understand.
Yeah, my first book is entitled The Game Rules for Life. I wrote that back in 2000. That was my first book. It's under 200 pages. It was basically, you know, everything I'd learned at that point. I was 40 at the time. I'm now 29. And so it encompassed everything. And, you know, and I was just coming out of Christianity at the time. And so it had thoughts of that. But there was a lot of different points in that that were metaphysical in nature. And honestly, some of that book has gone into my courses at IMHS, Metaphysics Institute.
So there is a 10-year span here from about the year 2000 to 2009, you know, 2010, that you covered a lot of ground. I mean, you covered a lot of ground during that time to eventually establish MCHS Church and IMHS, which was in 2009, I believe, correct?
2010, spring of 2010.
Yeah. But you had been writing it prior to that.
Yeah, a lot of the principles and concepts that are now part of the IMHS curriculum were developed during those years starting from about 2001, really from about 2000 when I wrote my first book, and then through the Empowered Recovery book, and then through everything I was teaching. When I was teaching, I wanted to be able I wanted a personality profile. Well, you know, you got to go out and buy those things. And I, you know, the people weren't paying for them as part of it, but I wanted to have one. So, you know, I wrote one. I developed an assertiveness profile, which you just don't come by those things. You know, I mean, how do you gauge somebody's ability to be assertive, or are they more aggressive? Are they more passive? Are they codependent? Are they passive aggressive? Well, how do you measure that? How do you get some kind of an idea? And so I developed the assertiveness profile and, you know, used that through my years of teaching, both of those two profiles, and, you know, administered them to thousands of people over those years. And then those were brought into the IMHS curriculum in various courses.
Well, I happen to know what's in your courses, Doug, and I'm amazed. And this is why I've been very excited to do this interview with you tonight. And I mean that sincerely, because, you know, we can have conversations, we can get to know each other, you can be a student of yours, we could be your friend, and so on. But there's this this development, and I don't just see it as somebody sits down one day and says, oh, I think I'll build a school.
No.
And writes it down. I mean, this is a life in progress. This is like a life's work that goes into such a monumental undertaking. And but I'm kind of pulling together here that, you know, you had some life-changing events around the year 2000,
right,
that, you know, took you on a 10-year journey.
Well, it continues, really. You know, when I was about 40, I divorced my wife. She's an alcoholic. If you're a student of IMHS, you probably know this story because I write about it. You know, and that's one of the lessons I learned. What you see is what you get. And I am very transparent in what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm a real live human being, and I make no bones about that. I've had some students feel a little awkward in reading about my honest story, and they've told me, and then I've had a bunch of other students say, wow, thanks for sharing that, you know, we know you're human. And that's the point. We're all human beings, and that's the lesson I'm trying to send. You know, we all have our story. I understand that. It's not like I'm special. I have a special story, but mine is a little bit more unique perhaps than most, in that when I divorced my wife, I also left the church, and when I left the church, they all disowned me. So, you know, and I was I was fourth generation Jehovah's Witness. So when I left, everybody I ever known went with it. They all went away. My brother, my sister, my father. You know, my mother was an alcoholic, and she didn't quite go away until I made her go away a few years later, and she just burned too many bridges, so I don't have a relationship with her because of that. But there's two cousins that left before me, and I have a contact with them, and there is my mentor, interestingly enough, from when I lived in Denver. My mentor, that's how I met him, he'd become a witness, and many years of it, and they ended up leaving it too, and they were in California, and they just moved to Florida here. And so those are the only people in my life today, and they're that's it. So not only did I lose the marriage, I lost my religion, I lost a lot. I went through a lot of existential stuff during those years. So it was about 1999 through about 2001 or two, until I finally got a grip and try to figure some things out. And so that was all just a huge learning experience. So that all of that went into shaping who I am.
Well, not everybody going through all of that is still going to build programs and write personality and assertiveness programs and profiles.
Well,
so this is all part of that extraordinary aspect of you that I find, really quite amazing, because you're observant too. You have, if I can say this, this ability to be objective about yourself and observant enough about the human condition to still write about it and observe and still aspire.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of principles that I live by, core values, things about me that students will learn as they go through the curriculum. But some of these principles, core values, are, I never ask or say that's too hard. I always ask, how hard can it be? I mean, that's just part of who I am. And another thing that leads to is that, like, for example, when I was going through the throes of an alcoholic marriage and trying to figure out what to do, I looked everywhere for solutions. You know, I didn't want my family to fall apart. I mean, that was an 18-year-long marriage, and, I didn't want the family to fall apart. And I prayed to God repeatedly, beseeched. I was an elder in the church. I was doing everything I could to try to keep my family together. And I looked everywhere for solutions. To this issue, I was codependent. It's crazy. I mean, I was crazy codependent. Never even knew it. Didn't have any clue about it. But that's what I was, and that's exactly why I found myself in that situation. So I look at these lessons, and I say, gee, Doug, you are where you are because of the choices you made. And that's what I tell people. You are where you are because of the choices you made. And I say, well, wait a minute, Doug. Here I am talking to myself. You didn't want that to happen. Well, of course I didn't. Nobody wants that to happen. But due to inexperience, due to my own being raised by a codependent father and an alcoholic mother, that's how I was turned out. I mean, I was codependent, and that was my vibe, my energy signature. So what was I attracted to? Somebody who's unhealthy, and that's exactly what happened. So I made those choices. 18 years later, I'm trying to figure out how to fix it. You know, I go to Al-Anon, and I look at Al-Anon, I'm thinking, wait a minute, they do the same 12 steps as AA, and it's not the same thing. And I see these people who are coming to Al-Anon week after week for 20 years trying to figure it out. Oh, no, hell no, that's not going to happen. I want this resolved. You know, I want to fix it, which is still part of the codependent thing, but it's still, it's still valid. I don't want to live this way. And so I looked and looked and looked, and I could not find anything to help me resolve this alcoholic relationship. So what did I do? I created one. It's called HardRecovery.com, and it's been in existence ever since about 2000 when I started it. And it's powerful. There's nothing else like it. I literally wrote the book on alcoholic relationships, and I don't say that out of ego. I say it because it's just simply true. And the lessons that I learned through that whole thing, for example, I was looking for a solution, could not find it. And ultimately, I got it. You know, the solution that I was looking for was outside of my belief system. Because my belief system at the time is God hates a divorcing, you don't get divorced. There was no solution within those parameters. The solution I was looking for was outside of my belief system. So there's a huge life lesson. Huge. I mean, that one little thing there is worth its weight in gold. Another one, if you've got a problem, you have a choice. You can either take care of the problem now, or you can suffer longer and still take care of the problem later. But either way, you're going to take care of it eventually or die from the pain. That's from me. That's my life experience. It's called the now or later rule. And it's worth its, I mean, I can't even put a price on it, because if people follow this stuff, they will save themselves a lot of heartache, a lot of headaches, and a lot of money. Okay, I'm off that soapbox.
That's a good soapbox. That same curiosity and drive to look for answers took you to other metaphysical schools too, didn't it?
Yeah, I did, and it's interesting, and not until that actually came later on. The next kind of metaphysical thing that I did was, as I mentioned earlier, I always wanted to investigate the paranormal, anomalous research, you know, and just, I could never do it because of my religion, you know, they don't believe in that stuff. And so, finally, in the end of 2005 is when I finally was in a position. I was still traveling, you know, gone up to 40 weeks a year and home on the weekends, but I still was in a position to start my own research group, and I did. And that was about Christmas of 2005, so that's when I started it. Now, I'd been reading and studying and watching all the documentaries, everything for decades, you know, so it's not like I didn't know a thing about it. I'd had tons of experience with conducting research and interviews and things like that. So that was not new to me. And so here I come, I start my group. I mean, the first few months, heck, I don't think we even got a member until it was like April of 2006. During that time, I was invited to speak at a museum in Bartow, Florida, for their October, you know, the Halloween thing. And so I did that in October of that year, and that's when I met more people. I met a good friend of mine, Gregory Kent, spiritualist medium, and we're friends to this day. I met another good friend of mine at that, Grant Rubin Dunst. He'd actually contacted me. He contacted me earlier, like a few days before I was going to speak. It's interesting because he was familiar with my work with Empowered Recovery because he's a licensed therapist. So he was familiar with my work with Empowered Recovery, and he was also interested in the paranormal. So he's going around looking for a local group, and my name pops up, and he says, "Is that the same one?" You know, and sure enough, it was. So he and I have a good friendship, and so here I am involved in, you know, we did some investigations and everything I learned from, and of course I was watching all the shows of the day, the reality, you know, the Ghost Hunters and all that stuff. But I learned from all of it, and I learned a lot in a short time. And this is 2006. The next year, 2007, I wrote the Certified Paranormal Investigator course, CPI course, which hundreds of people have taken. And I don't think there's anything else like it. The only thing that outdoes the CPI course, in my opinion right now, is the expanded version of it in the IMHS degree program. So here's another aspect of who I am. Here my detractors could say, oh, gee, he's only been doing this a year and a half, and he's coming out with a course on it. You know, who does he think he is? And that is who I am, because I didn't just come out with another ghost hunting course. I don't do ghost hunting. I came out with a serious anomalous research course, the CPI course, and I brought to the table all of my gifts in my experience, and I brought to the table the life leadership paragon, because if you don't know who you are and why you are who you are, if you don't have self-responsibility, if you don't respect free will, including those of spirits, and you're not complete within yourself, you are not going to be able to do an effective job as a paranormal researcher, anomalous researcher, cryptozoologist, manager, I don't care what the profession is, but especially with ghost research. Because so many people, oh, I don't want them to follow me home. And I'm thinking, why not? I want them to follow me home. I want to do my research here, not out there. And so I was going against all of those superstitious things. You know, Ouija boards, they're bad. Oh, really? Well, let's better go buy one and see if the thing works. No, not doesn't work for me, but table tipping was cool. So, you know, I'm bringing who I am to the table. And that's what I've told so many other people. Whatever you are, bring it to the table. What gifts do you bring to the table? What makes it unique? What makes it yours?
So you went from this paranormal group that you kind of got involved with. You brought along your life leadership paragon. You brought along, you know, decades of experience into developing a CPI course,
mm-hmm.
you know, for investigators.
Mm-hmm.
Is that around the time that you established the Paranexus group?
Yeah, Paranexus, in fact, as a result of the CPI course, a friend of mine, Yari Mikula, had ordered the course and contacted me. We became friends, and we both founded Paranexus in 2008 in the spring. And, you know, as an association of paranormal researchers, anomalous researchers, and I use anomalous to mean all of it, you know, ghosts, UFOs, cryptids, whatever, anything that's out of our current normal. Doesn't mean it's, you know, abnormal. It just means it's not in our current normal. And so we founded that, you know, we were really trying to found something that was solid, grounded, objective, serious for serious researchers. And unfortunately, there just weren't that many of them around to support it. I mean, we even incorporated, we did a 501c3. That was a lot of work. And it just didn't go anywhere because there's not that many people who are really serious about it. There's a ton of weekend warriors and people who want to see a ghost and who want to get scared, just like they go to a, you know, haunted house on Halloween or something. But, you know, there's just not enough people who are serious researchers who think for themselves. So, into 2011, I dissolved the corporation, dissolved the 501, and it's a website now, and it's not that active anymore because I don't just allow anybody to register. They have to be certified somewhere. They either have to be a CPI, a CLPI, which is for the leadership course. They have to have some training somewhere. I mean, they could be a MUFON field investigator and they can join. It's free, but you have to be trained because I'm not dealing with, you know, the amateurs out there anymore. It's just like, I'm not going to go there. I'm way past that. So if you want to be part of it, you know, you got to be involved in continuing education.
Well, over the Paranexus Universe shows that you did on Block Talk Radio, mm-hmm. it still gets thousands of listeners.
Yeah. Our archives get, gosh, 1,000 to 1,500 or more listens a week. And
which is really amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we interviewed some interesting people, you know, a lot of the big names in the field, and we had some great guests, and Grant and I did that for, gosh, what was it, 3 years about? And we had 150 shows, and it was a trip, you know, and that was in, and I still do some of the same types of topics on this show occasionally.
Yeah. So, somewhere between Paranexus and 2010, you decided to incorporate your own church, the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I'd like to know where you came up with the name. And number two, what would possess you to incorporate a church?
I understand. I understand that. during my Paranexus days, one of the charter members of Paranexus was Ingrid Irwin in Australia. And Ingrid is such a bright soul. She's such a great lady. And so, you know, as she became more active in Paranexus, she, you know, we invited her to join the board of directors. And so that gave me an opportunity to get to know Ying really well. She's been on this show a couple of times.
Yeah.
And she and I got talking one night. It was like, you know, I mean, she's like, what, 12 or 14 hours ahead of us. So, you know, it was like 1 in the morning for me, and it was like 3 in the afternoon for her. But we got talking, and she told me about a metaphysics doctoral degree that she had gotten. And I didn't even know that they existed. I just didn't know that was part of just, you know, I was doing my thing and teaching my stuff. And so she kind of really opened me up to that. And so I went looking, and I really looked and looked and looked, and even enrolled in one. And when I got the materials, I'm thinking, really? I mean, no. This is, you know, Christianized. It's not seeking truth. It's basically fringy. And as I looked closer, I thought everything I've ever done has been about consciousness and existence. And I said, you know what? I can't find what I want. I better create it. So I did.
Wow.
And that's where the church, of course, now if you want to give religiously based degrees, you have to have a church as a parent. So MCHS, the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, was born. The humanistic, I'd looked at different belief systems after I left Christianity. One of them was humanists. And as I looked at humanists, I'm thinking, yeah, that's good. That's great. Yeah. And then they say, you know, basically they're materialistic in thing. They're thinking that, in other words, there's nothing beyond our brains, or the chemical processes in our brains. They don't believe in paranormal. They don't believe in spirits, ghosts, or UFOs, or anything like that to speak of. Basically, you know, when you die, you're dead, and that's it. And I'm sorry, I can't buy that. There's got to be more to it than that. So what I did was I incorporated aspects of humanism into MCHS Church, but it's not humanism. And it's refined, if you will. You know, it's basically the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science is what I call it. The science is to help people understand that it's objective, grounded, reasonable, not fringy.
You incorporate your general philosophy. I mean, you're a very pragmatic guy.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that you have this humanity that beams from you anyway. You're genuine caring for people. I know that about you. But you are pragmatic. You're sensible, you're practical. You like to get to the bottom of things and you know, like, what's the bottom line?
But, model.
there you go. I mean, how would you then sit down one day and come up with these extraordinary principles of belief? Which I might say right off the top, everyone is listening. The first is do no harm, do right. I mean, obviously that makes sense that it would be number one. But how do you write that? How do you formulate that in your mind? Because they're brilliant. And I'm not just saying that because, geez, I'm interviewing Dr. Doug Kelly. I mean that because from the moment I ever Googled and went on to MCHS, I mean, I fell in love with them.
Well, these principles of belief came out of my experience is what they did. And I looked at, I look at everything. I picked the number 9 because it's a good number. It's one of my favorite numbers. And so I knew I needed 9 principles. It just flows, you know, just the way I roll. And so I looked at these and I thought, I'm creating a spiritual belief system here, a spiritual philosophy, and I need to cover the bases. They need to be sufficiently broad, but yet they need to be principles. They don't need to be rules. They need to be principles. Rules, you know, are much more narrow, and you need a gazillion of them. But with one principle, I can cover a multitude of rules. The one principle is do no harm. Now, did I invent do no harm? Of course not. That's been around. You know, there's a lot of groups and philosophies that practice that, and that's great. But there's another one that I attached to that did come from me, do right. Because doing no harm doesn't always quite cut it. There are times when, yeah, we can do no harm, but by not acting, we're not doing the right thing. So it's kind of a compliment to do no harm, do right. And so those two principles right there cover everything else to speak of, you know. I mean, just live by those. And, you know, Christians have, you know, what Jesus said, well, purported to say because it actually came from somebody else, but love your neighbor as yourself. You know, that's essentially the concept here. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. You know, I've always been, what's the word? Infatuated? That's not really a good word. Amazed, taken with the whole human spirit. Blame Star Trek for that. You know, I know the power of the human spirit. It is amazing, and it's indomitable. It cannot be beaten. And so that had to be, you know, that's part of who we are. Because remember, everything about MCHS is within the context of the human condition. Explore the human condition. Understand the human condition. Understand how different things impact the human condition. And so that's where that is. And I just recently added that last sentence, we invoke and exert the counselor and guru within, because, you know, along the way here, I've had people who want me to be their guru, their spiritual counselor. It's not just been one, it's been a number, you know, and they basically are in their own way. And I know it's an honor, and I take it as an honor, but that honor can end up glorifying or putting me up on a pedestal when I'm trying to teach them to be complete within yourself, which, by the way, is an expression that I learned from my father and haven't heard anywhere else. And so I'm trying to teach people to stand on their own two feet. And, you know, if I was more of a cult leader type, I'd never teach people to do that. No, 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 you need me. You know, you better pour your, you know, pay me your money and, you know, give me your belongings. And, you know, you need me. You need to hang on every word I say. But that's not what I do. I don't want to create a cult. I came out of a cult. I want to create a better world.
Go ahead. You were going to read the next principle of belief, weren't you?
I'm going to let you read it. Well,
We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and that we believe in the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition.
And the reason for that principle of belief is that it goes back to the life leadership paragon, self-responsibility. You know, we're not stupid. The human beings are smart. We just need to channel that brilliance into the right area. We're capable of solving our problems. I will never believe that we need some mythical god figure in the sky to come and save our asses. Excuse my French. It's not really French. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not going there. You know, we've got our issues. We have our development. We need to learn our lessons. And those are our lessons to learn. Those are precious. Don't ever deny me my opportunity to learn lessons, because those are mine. And they may be hard to learn. They may take a while to learn, but they're mine. And they're nobody else's, so you can't have them.
Well, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from the same star material. And, of course, that, as you continue to write, are equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I mean, come on, we're all from star material. Everything that you see is from the stars. It's from the supernova, you know, creates the heavier elements and creates these planets, and here we are. So I don't care whether you're red, green, purple, black, blue, white. I don't care what color you are. You're all from the same stuff. You know, we all are. I don't care whether you're gay, straight, I don't even like that term, non-gay. I don't care, you know, whether you're celibate, I don't care. You know, we all came from the same place. It's human social stuff, conditioning, and thanks in no small part to religion that has created these biases, these prejudices, you know, against blacks, against anybody, you know, not white. Of course, then there's also the prejudice against whites. It goes both ways, folks. And then there's prejudice against gay. And, you know, it's basically people trying to control other people. Oh, you should, you know, we don't do gay people. You know, that's just wrong. You know, no, the thing that's wrong is your Bible. I censored myself. Is your Bible. It's not, it's not us. It's, you know, we're human. You know, we need to have human compassion for people. We need to be a little more tolerant. We need to increase our awareness. We need to just stop fighting and start building.
Well, and of course, when you mention the church, you know, rather than a supreme being, which is number five, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. And you're basically saying, come on, everybody. We're all, and it goes right back to earlier, we're all star stuff. Like, and stop this nonsense, be responsible.
Well, honestly, that is worded that way in a very, shall we say, politically correct or a diplomatic way. It's softened. Basically, I wanted to write, you know, stop believing in something outside of yourself. Stop this mythical God crap, because it's not real. I grew up on it. I was weaned on it. I believed it. It's not real. It's not real. You cannot reconcile the concept of a loving creator with the outcries of humanity. They are irreconcilable. Can't do it. Therefore, something's got to give here. And so what I'm trying to say with that one is, look, we all have that divine energy, divine meaning being awesome, great, glorious. We do. And it's in all things. It's in all creation. Does that mean that we're individually God? No. Does it mean we're all part of some God being? No. It means that we're divine. It means that we have all this capability, all this beauty.
But we are connected.
And we are connected.
We're all star stuff.
Yes. And we're all connected. And you know, quantum entanglement. We're all connected because of that. And so that's what that means.
We believe the nature of a human being encompasses both the physical and spiritual aspect, and therefore maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. That's a big one.
It is. You know, in creating a spiritual philosophy, you've got to address life after death. And so in that number six principle, I've always been a dualist. I mean, we have a physical component, we have a spiritual component. I think that's just rather obvious. Dualist as opposed to a materialist or an idealist. Materialist means everything can be explained with physical matter. There is no life after death. An idealist believes that everything that exists as a result of consciousness. So, you know, in a sense, it's not real. It's almost like the Matrix. Whereas I believe that we need to come back down to the ground and, you know, look, we're here. There's a physical component. There's a spiritual component. And so it was important to identify that. And this whole idea of human consciousness surviving the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion, that's not just something I pulled out of the air one day. That was actually the result of a lot of thinking, a lot of research, and a lot of experience on my part, because I didn't know the answer to that at one point. And I can't prove it, you know, with the scientific reproducible method, but I can defend it. We have near-death experiences. We have the survival hypothesis, which is based on the first law of thermodynamics, which states you cannot create or destroy energy. It can only be transformed into something else. We have SDEs, which is shared death experiences, and where all the naysayers say that the near-death experiences can be explained with oxygen deprivation of the brain, shared death experiences cannot, because they are had by people who are healthy, and there's those. So there's a lot of compelling evidence, plus my own experience with spirits themselves on my investigations, with table tipping, with consciousness. There's a lot of compelling evidence that our personalities must remain coherent afterward, because, you know, they're there. People are there.
Number seven, I'm moving right along here.
Go ahead, please do.
We believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will. that synergistically creates, you know, self-completeness, which is what we've been talking about all along, which is your life leadership paragon that you started ever so many years ago. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically self-actualization.
Yep, it is self-actualization, self-completeness. That's the goal, you know. And here's the beauty part of it. You know, here's a little secret that only people who take Course M8 in the degree program really hear, is that if you want a successful life, then you need to bring balance to the life leadership paragon. You see, adversity is nothing more or less than a state of disorder. Things are not in their proper order. So when you put things back into their proper order, the adversity goes away. Well, if you want to have healthy relationships, and not only with yourself, but with everyone else, and you got to bring balance and order to the elements of the life leadership paragon. You've got to restore order to self-acceptance. None of that self-denigration and all that stuff. You got to understand that you're perfect just the way you are, provided you're striving to be better tomorrow than you were yesterday. You know, there's nobody like you. You got to bring balance to self-responsibility. That means take responsibility for your own actions, for your choices. If you don't want to make positive choices in your life, then choices will be made for you. We don't want that. We want to make active choices. You got to bring balance and order to respect for free will. And the biggest part of that is not telling people what to do. Stop trying to control other people. Stop trying to change people. That is one of the biggest problems in most relationships to this very day, that I don't like the way you do that. I want you to change. Well, you know, here's the bottom line. You either accept the person for who they are and not complain, or you're not in a relationship with them. You have to respect free will. When you bring order to those three, you create self-completeness. That means I don't have them esteem. That means I have internal expectations, internal validation. I know who I am and why I am who I am. And if you disagree, that's perfectly fine. I just don't care. I don't need for you to agree with me. I don't need for anybody to agree with me. I'm on my mission. I'm on my path. I'm on my journey. And I send out the invitation. Come along. Come along for the ride. Help out if you want. And if you don't want, that's fine. But I'm not stopping. I'm moving forward.
Number 8 is in the value of practical education in all aspects of metaphysics, metapsychology, life skills, and empowering the human spirit, basically. And so what you're saying is just stand in yourself and keep learning.
Yeah. You know, basically, I'm in number 8, we believe in the value of practical education. Well, it's no secret that the more highly educated a society is, the more peaceful they are and the more successful they are. We need to educate people. It's a mandate of the church to educate in metaphysics, that's consciousness and existence, metapsychology, basically the spiritual aspects, and life skills, because life skills help make better lives. If you don't know how to communicate assertively, if you don't know how to soften your words and you're only abrupt all the time, you're going to alienate people. You need life skills. Critical thinking skills, all those different types of life skills to be more successful, you know. And when it comes to being open-minded, we are. We're just not so open-minded, as the saying goes, that our brains fall out. And that's one thing that, you know, that's so interesting to me, because in Course M2 in the Master's program, I go into a lot of death and dying, and I go way into reincarnation. And the fact of the matter, and the long and the short of it is, I don't know whether it's true or not. I suspect reincarnation may be true, but I can't prove it, and nobody can prove it. And so far, no student has refuted any of my arguments. They try, but they all are basing their arguments on assumptions. And what I'm trying to teach people to do is to keep your feet on the ground. Look, reincarnation could be true. I think it might be. But I can't prove it. And so I can't tell you, oh, yes, reincarnation is true, because I don't have any memories here. It's not subjective for me, right? And somebody might have memories. They might know it, but they can't prove it. And they can't even prove it to a reasonable degree, because I can't. And if I can't, then, of course, nobody can, right? That makes sense?
Which is
I'm just kidding, you know.
Which is precisely why in developing these nine principles, you were very conscientious not to make claims that would lend to a subjective or emotional belief system.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because, see, all of this I can back up. And, you know, and you look at number nine, gives us hope for the future. We believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. That's hope for the future. The more educated we become, the more aware we become, the higher we become. The more evolved, you know. You go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, in where you are now, what's your vision for the future? You know, one of your first questions out of the bachelor's program is, what is an individual's mission statement and a vision statement? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you that, not only about the now, what is your mission? Well, we already know what your mission is, Doug, but your vision. But when you began this journey of putting IMHS together and MCHS, what was your, at that time, your mission statement and your best vision that you could have had in your mind at the time?
Well, you know, my mission statement really hasn't changed since I left Christianity. And this pretty much is what it was then, too. My mission has always been to help people get past the things that hold them back. And that can be within the context of a variety of different areas. So that's my mission. My mission is to help people get past the things that hold them back. It's also to discover, you know, more about the human condition. And so everything I do fulfills that mission. And of course, you know, that's part of the thing that brings meaning to my life. And my purpose has changed and broadened over the years to establish that meaning of leaving the woodpile higher than I found it. That's what I want to do. You know, I want to make a difference. I want to help be part of that solution, not part of the problem. And I want to help folks to improve their lives and improve their children's lives, because here's the beautiful thing. If you can help adults learn some of these concepts that cost me so much pain and hundreds of thousands of dollars to learn, they can change their lives for the better. And then they teach their children these concepts. You know, don't try to change or control somebody. If they just teach your kids that, then their kids will understand that you can't do that. You know, to accept other people, you know, if they will just teach that, then the world will be a better place as the generations continue to grow, you know.
So what was the vision when you started the school and the church? Did you have a particular vision in mind, or you just dove in and started writing like a crazy guy?
it's my vision's always been to leave the woodpile higher than you found it, to help people get past some things holding back. And it depends on what I'm doing. For example, when I wrote the CPI course back in 2007, my vision was to help people to keep their feet on the ground, you know, in terms of paranormal research, to understand that there's a lot more to this thing than going out on a ghost hunt, that it starts with them, that they have to have the proper attitude toward themselves and others in order to do an effective job. So that was part of that vision. You know, as I did Paranexus, it was the same type of thing. Let's see what we can come up with, folks. Let's pool our talents together. Let's see if we can't really come up with some answers here, because we haven't made any progress in the last few decades. Okay, and then as I continued to grow and I realized that I have all of these skills that I've been teaching all my life and some great concepts that are metaphysical, when that realization hit me in the spring of 2010, it was a profound personal experience for me, because I felt like everything I had done prior was grooming me, or I was was preparing me for this. This is the crowning achievement. This is what I was supposed to do. And by saying this, I don't mean there's somebody up there pulling strings. I just mean that this is who I am. And in some level, higher self, I don't know, but on some level, all of the experience and all of the things I've done and all of the lessons, the places I've been, all the thinking have prepared me for this. This is what I am supposed to do. You know, I mean, I was 51 when I started this, and that's a lot of life experience. So everything was to prepare me for MCHS and IMHS, and it's changing lives. You know, I ought to be charging $5,000 or $10,000 tuition for the degree program, but I can't do that because then the people in Sri Lanka can't enroll. You know, there's got to be a minimal tuition just to keep things going. But you know, I mean, I've offered the hardship scholarships, and I've given thousands and thousands of dollars away, literally out of my pocket, for those, and all in an effort to help people grow. So my vision for the future is for MCHS Church to continue to grow. I'm working on the Enchiridion. That'll be out in a few months or 6 months or so. That's just a handbook of what our beliefs are. I envision the school to grow, and I call on students to spread the word, and they do. And let's help change lives for the better so that everybody can be happier, so that we can all have a positive impact on those within our sphere of influence.
You know, I might just throw in here, Doug, when I came on in 2011, just over 2 years ago now, I was printing out all the course material. And I showed it to you on Skype one day, and you went, "I wrote that?" And yeah. I remember that you then got busy, and you started printing it out, and you went, "Wow, I did that." And I think it's really important. One of the things that you do teach is celebrate yourself. And I love it that you do it for yourself, too. It's like you're willing to celebrate yourself and equal to what you encourage other people to do. So, you know, for people who are listening, there's a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctoral program. And the first bachelor's is all about you. It's all about learning about you. Yes, there's an introduction to metaphysics, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you get quite a wide view of metaphysics, but it's really understanding a life view, if you will, and it incorporates at some level all the principles of belief. And you know, this is, you know, I've really enjoyed this evening, Doug. I've enjoyed listening to you speak from your heart and hearing more about your journey. And you know, I know that I appreciate it, and I know all our listeners appreciate it, and so do the students, for that matter. Thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you, Vicki, and thank you for what you do, and thank the students for what they do. And, you know, just keep striving. Don't give up. That's my message to people. I mean, there are times I wanted to give up, too. Don't. You know, this is not all there is. Keep plugging away. You know, and to my students, I know you have distractions. I know you have things that come up. You lose loved ones in death, and it all gets in the way. But keep plugging away. Keep striving for it. And go out and happen to the world. Don't let the world happen to you. Go out and happen to life. And you'll be successful. And I'm proud of all of you, by the way, for even having the courage to enroll. I'm proud of people to register at MCHS Church as members and to take a stand for a much healthier spiritual philosophy.
We'll be back next week with another great show. I think we're doing readings next week, aren't we, Doug?
Yeah, I think we are.
Well, I'm doing readings.
Yeah, you're doing readings, and I'm I'm kind of, you know, listening.
That's good. You know, thanks. I'm just going to take liberty here, Doug, and wrap the show up. And thanks, everybody. As Doug would often say, you know, that we got to live it big, keep going. So thanks.
Yeah, and thanks to John Hightower for helping behind the scenes, and thanks to those live listeners and comments in the chat room. So, have a great week. We're out of time. Good night. Thanks, Vicki.
Good night.